Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of super yachting is Sophia Wilson.
Hello, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Like the tan?
Yes, excellent as ever. You're claiming bad weather in Australia in December. I'm not sure this is true.
So we were in Brisbane. It was the cold. It was the start, 1st of December. I was in Brisbane on the 1st of December, start of summer. It was the coldest start of summer day in Brisbane's history. It was so, well, it wasn't, I'm not going to say it's so cold. I mean, it was quite cold and it was wet and very, very unpleasant indeed. So yeah, Queensland, what's going on?
No tan for Stuart.
Yeah, no tan. So we'll talk about my adventures down under in just a bit. But I got back yesterday morning. So we're recording this on Monday. And I have considerable brain fog. So this could, the stopping and starting of this podcast, we could be here for the next 3 hours. So I apologize, Sophia. But anyway, the big news, well, there's lots of big news, but the January issue of Boat International is out on Thursday. So a few days after this is released, it's a huge issue, a blockbuster. So there's loads in it. Global order book, obviously. So every year in January, we publish the results of our global order book, which is the survey, the ultimate survey, the definitive survey of the super yacht industry, showing what's in build and where, and types of projects, what's doing better than others, sailing yachts, sport fishers, explorers, regular motor yachts, open boats, sports boats, how many on spec projects there are as a proportion of the order book, full custom versus semi-custom. And I think actually right in the editor's letter of the January issue that the trend that I see accelerating year on year is the decline in the number of full custom yachts in build and the increasing popularity of semi-custom boats.
I think CAM was a real testament to that this year. You just really got a sense of the strength of that side of the market. Well, for me personally, I did.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at shipyards like Bilgin, having success with the semi-custom platform in the 80-meter series. The semi-custom yachts are getting bigger and bigger. And when I started in the industry, or not long ago, it didn't feel like 80 meters was a realistic target for a true semi-custom product. I remember Blom & Voss had a product that didn't quite make it. But now it really feels like, 80 or even bigger is well within reach for semi-custom customers and people who want a platform product. I mean, lots of custom yards build on platforms too, but with incredibly novel and innovative superstructures and topsides. But having that kind of real family sistership type boat in the 80 meter range is not any more an unusual thing at all. So that's one of the findings of the global order book, the relative proportion of full custom and semi-custom boats. But also in the issue is the top 101. So we have a look at all the new big boats entering the top 101 list. I think there's 5 or 6 or something like that in the issue. Lots of big stuff. On the cover is 60 meter Heesen Lucene. Lots of moon puns, obviously. Throughout the issue.
Better or worse than the Beatles cover lines that I initially saw.
I got some lovely letters about my Beatles.
Did you?
Cover lines in my Beatles editor's letter.
You got lovely letters? What, plural?
Well, I got a couple of WhatsApps. Okay. I'm claiming it. We also have the Club Swan 80, My Song, Pierluigi Loripiana's new sailing yacht. Absolute weapon, this thing. Have a look, and also 43-meter Akala, which Caroline has written about after seeing it at Monaco. And I should flag as well, in our boat life section, we have a new monthly property guide starting this month. And this month, it's focusing on the best mountain resorts and chic chalets. We've got a great new property writer. So if you're looking to spend loads of cash up in the mountains and buy a beautiful chalet, well, just don't do it until you've read this column. That's my advice. Last but not least, obviously in January issue as well, it really is an issue full of specials, isn't it? In the entire voyage section is given over to the travel hot list. So our travel editor, Georgia, basically gathers all the coolest places and things and destinations and hotels and resorts and spas that you should see in 2023. And of the lot of them, I've picked out one. And Sophia's picked out one.
I've actually picked out two. Have you? Couldn't decide.
Okay, that's fine. So I like the sound of, there's a new beach club. I know you're thinking Stuart Beach Club. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But actually, it's attached to a hotel in Puglia called Masseria Calderisi. If you've stayed there, let me know what it's like, because it looks absolutely perfect. And so the beach club is opening in April, but the hotel was originally a 17th century farm. It's surrounded by olive groves, citrus and almond trees. And from April, it'll have this fancy new beach club. But Puglia, slow, lazy, heavy air, warm Puglia. So I learned a new word today.
Yeah.
The perfect place to go into goblin mode.
Yeah, so I'm slightly ashamed to admit earlier in the office that you asked me whether I knew this, and I didn't know it either. Apparently it's something for the youth.
The youth. So I was reading an article today how goblin mode has been voted as the most popular word or phrase of 2022, and shamefully, yeah, I had to look up what goblin mode, well, actually ask our younger colleagues what the hell goblin mode was. I mean, goblin mode. Anyway, apparently it means just slacking. It's just kind of no makeup.
It means sort of cocooning, I think.
Cocooning, yeah. But you just kind of, you...
Aggressive cocooning.
Yeah. What the hell's cocooning?
Like a caterpillar. And you go into a cocoon.
You don't go back into a cocoon. You come from a cocoon.
I don't know. I don't mind this. It's just the way that I describe things. Okay. Right. I mean, moving on. I have to ask the young and the team a lot of the time when they talk about it. They send me WhatsApp sometimes and I've got no idea what they mean. It makes me feel very old.
Maybe you can make cocooing 2023's.
Yeah, gonna start the campaign here.
So if you want to go cocooning or go into goblin mode, I recommend Masseria Calderisi in Puglia. I guess where I'll be in full goblin mode next summer. Fingers crossed. What were your favourites, Sophia?
I had two that stood out for the list. So one is called The Hideout, which is about to open. Well, I think it might open next week in Jos Van Dyk, which is obviously in the British Virgin Islands, which is an area that I love. It's just 7 thatched villas. It looks super chill, beautiful beach, very close to the Soggy Dollar Bar. So plenty of painkillers, which I taught you about a few podcasts ago.
Yeah, you taught me about painkillers. I had no idea.
Yeah. So I think that looks pretty epic. As I say, I love the BBIs. Great place to hang out. And the second was Alang Private Island, which is actually part of the Barwara Reserve, which I was fortunate enough to go to back in my travel editor days. And it's this incredibly remote archipelago in Indonesia. So when I stayed a night in Singapore, and then it's kind of a good hour and a half, 2 hours on a seaplane out there. So it really is properly remote. But they then, alongside the resort, which isn't huge, they've now opened a private island part of that. So if you want to be even more secluded, then you can have your own private island. And I would love to go. They were still developing it when I was there. And it obviously got delayed because of COVID. But I would love to go back and see it now it's fully open.
You go cocoon.
I'll go cocoon.
I'll be goblin mode in Puglia. You'll be cocooning in Alang Private Island.
Yeah.
We should also highlight the fact that the finalists for our Design and Innovation Awards have been revealed. So these are the awards we give out at the start of the Super Design Festival, which is returning to Cortina, I'm very happy to say, in February next year. Everyone's very excited about that. Back in the mountains where it rightfully belongs. So the BDA, these awards acknowledge not only the naval architects and the styling, but also design and technology aspects of a yacht. So there's way too many finalists to go through this. God, loads of them. But they're all on the website at the moment. All very worthy finalists too. But I thought Sophia and I would have a little competition here, because obviously we don't know who the winners are, and we won't know because it's a closely guarded secret like the World Superyacht Awards until the night. But so we've picked two categories here: outstanding exterior motor, so outstanding exterior design of motor yacht 60 meters above, and best interior design motor yachts 500 gross tons and above. And the finalists in the exterior motor yacht 60 meters and above category are Kensho, 75 meter Italian Sea Group, Yacht Energy, the 77.8-meter Armels, Arpo, the 115-meter Lurs, and Lucene, 60-meter Heath, and Rio, the 62-meter CRN, and Project X, the 88-meter Golden Yachts Super Yacht. So of those, Sophia, what do you reckon will win?
I'm going to go with Kensho, just because I think she stand out, and with the colour as well. Plus, I think that is my favourite Boat International cover of the year, is the Kensho cover.
Yeah, it was a good cover. Yeah, I think I'd agree. You wouldn't. I mean, she's such a novel exterior. I mean, Energy's a good-looking boat. Arpo's got great lines. Lucene's handsome. Rio's just swooping Amiga Architects. They've done a great job on that boat. And Project X is a Kim Freevok, which is on the cover of the February issue, which we're just working on now. So, but of those, I think, yeah, Kensho, I'd agree, is a fantastic example of rethinking exterior of a yacht. So best interior design, the finalists have come together. The 60-meter Armels, Kensho again, Energy again, Project X again, Arpo again, and Lucene again.
So I think Kensho also could be in the running for this, because I didn't actually manage to get on board, but I've heard very impressive things about her interior. But I am going to go with Come Together, because I love the interior of that yacht's winch design. All about the detail, no bling, just incredible craftsmanship with woods and textures and materials. So I'm going to go with Come Together as my shout for that one.
Yeah, I think, Come Together is lovely. So she's on the cover of the January issue.
December issue.
There you go. She was the cover of our December issue.
Hence the Beatles. Well,
hence all the Beatles stuff. I told you, it's brain for it's jet lag. What can I say? Wow, some great interiors there. Energy was very special. Is very special. And Project X, I did like, actually.
Arpo as well, I've heard amazing.
Arpo, the interior of Arpo is so... I think it's the most expensive interior Moran have ever helped project manage.
Wow. When you consider what Moran project managed, that's quite some statement.
Yeah. I did have a good look through Arpo at the show, and the amount of materials and surfaces and its stones and the works is quite incredible.
I guess what a lot of it comes down to with the BDA, correct me if I'm wrong, is it's also about how much it's not just which is the most expensive, it's which yacht has kind of most fulfilled the owner's criteria and is kind of achieving its purpose. So I guess that puts a slightly different spin on it again.
Yeah, it does. I think it's a tricky category. But just because I'm so obsessed with Kensho.
And Kensho again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll check back in February when these are announced.
Yeah.
See if we got it right. So should we talk Australia?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Well, actually, it's not just Australia, is it? It's so
your South Pacific Grand Tour.
Grand Tour. So I went down to Auckland a couple of weeks ago to help a dear friend, Linda Berry, who runs an event called the Super Yacht Gathering. So she asked me to MC the day, which I was very proud and happy to do. But it gave us an opportunity. Toby, the CEO, came down as well to go and see some clients and friends in New Zealand, but also in Australia. But the event itself, the gathering event, was great, I thought. It was my first ever time being there. Ron Holland, Joff Beckett, Peter Mahoney from Benetti, Isaac Burrow, who I had met before, he's a very talented designer. Manoa from Tahiti, Captain Mike Gooding, who runs a boat called Silent World. So loads of great speakers and presentations, and the social events were very, very well put together by Linda and her team. And on the final day, actually, there was a great owner there called Ron, who's building a sunreef. He's owned this property outside New Zealand in the hinterland outside Auckland. And so he took us up and he drove us around this vast estate in this quad bike, which was lots of fun. New Zealand is so beautiful.
It's amazing.
And we had lunch at this restaurant called, I think it was called Sales Restaurant, and you kind of looking back over Auckland, and it's in a marina. But this marina must have 2,000 something some crazy number of yachts in it, and 90% of them are sailing yachts. So you just see, and I couldn't do it. I was with Jeff Brown, who's a very well-known photographer, and he took a photo, and I took a photo, and I swear I was taking a photo of the exact same thing he was. Except his looked amazing, and mine looked terrible. Just the sea of masts, and just capturing that. It is the city of sail, after all. But what a place. The viaduct down there in Auckland is beautiful. It's great hotels. It's just a shame we couldn't get there for the America's Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd have loved, because I obviously did a trip with New Zealand Tourism. I don't remember, it was October 2018, maybe, but kind of when it was starting to build towards the America's Cup, and seeing, you could imagine what that viaduct area in particular would have been like with a full non-COVID international America's Cup. And I was so excited about the prospect of hopefully going back. And then obviously the world slightly fell apart in the in-between time. But it has got a, when I was in Auckland, it was very drizzly, but it has got a cool vibe about it. And I always love, again, I'm going to butcher pronunciation, so I apologize. It's Waiheke, that's the island across.
Waiheke.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
I just love the idea of living there and then commuting into Auckland.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that lifestyle? I don't think it's going to happen, but open for offers if anyone wants to.
I think there's something about being in New Zealand and Auckland, and it's just, you feel it's easy to feel at home there. It's such a livable city. And being surrounded by water the whole time is a real, real joy. Same as Sydney, you get the same vibe in Sydney. Just the opportunities to access water in Sydney are endless. So while we're in Auckland, we went and did a tour of, as part of the event program, we went to Southern Spas. They're so busy. Some fantastic projects in Southern Spas. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about them really. But one I can talk about was a boat that is in the press a lot at the minute, which is Ocean Coast Y721, the largest sailing yacht in the world, whose masts have just been stepped. And those masts were made by Southern Spas. And actually, if you look at the masts, it's not easy to tell on first viewing, but if you look closely, the top kind of third or a quarter of each mast is a bit narrower than the rest of the mast. And that's because the tops of those masts hinge down, because the owner obviously has ambitions to transit Panama Canal. And obviously there are height restrictions. So with masts that weren't foldable like that, you wouldn't have been able to get through. The boat would have had to go the long way around. But the tops, the top kind of quarter just folds down. So it's very, very clever. So it'd be really interesting to know more about how Southern achieved that.
But did the mast still have to be stepped post the bridge in Amsterdam? Because obviously there was all that kind of...
Rotterdam.
There was obviously all that kind of furore about that. But they set the other side. But it will be able to get through the Panama Canal with this design.
With these foldable masts. And I can't think of, certainly not on a big boat, of another example of foldable masts. Yeah, write in if I'm wrong. I can't think of another example. So that's, just an example of the amazing things that company can do. And Aurums, we went to Aurums as well. And they're so busy. They are so, so busy. It's a brilliant shipyard, Aurums. They've just had a brand new 820-ton travel lift installed. Well, they did it themselves. So we were walking around with Craig Park, one of the co-owners of Aurums. And the lift arrived just before COVID. I think I've got this right. And obviously then COVID struck. So the people that were supposed to fly out and put it all together, because it arrived in pieces, couldn't travel. But they needed the lift. So they kind of sent these like IKEA-like instructions for assembling this enormous 820-ton travel lift. But they did it. Luckily, some very clever engineers and builders down there at Aurums, they pieced it all together. So it's up and running, and they're building a couple of new sheds, and they've have reconcreted a massive area, and they're building a new retaining wall and all sorts of stuff going on. But it will be able to, it can lift much bigger boats now, and it will be able to store them in some significant new sheds, just because the demand is so, so strong. Then we went over to Australia, see some people and host a party at the most amazing house in Sydney, which had the most incredible views over Sydney Harbour. And we also, we weren't just partying. We went up to Brisbane to see the yard, Rivergate Marina and Shipyard, and the boat works on the Coomera River on the Gold Coast. And like Aurum's, all of these facilities are investing a huge amount of money on the Australia, particularly because in Queensland, they're looking ahead to the Brisbane Summer Olympics in 2032 and anticipating a lot more demand from big yachts. And of course, the simple fact is that loads of Aussie owners repatriated their yachts during COVID. And suddenly these shipyards were awash with work. And Rivergate, they're installing a huge new ship lift that will be able to take boats up to 90 meters. And it will be the biggest. You can't do that outside Singapore, basically, in that region. So they'll suddenly have massive new capabilities. So their ground hasn't broken on that project yet, but they'll hopefully over the next few years, it'll get underway. The yard, building a marina outside their facility. The boat works too is just, they've spent a lot of money on that. It's owned by an old, a retired racing driver called Tony Longhurst, and they've built this great new kind of VIP lounge and viewing area for captains and owners. And they've got a brand new 300-ton lift. Yeah, it was really good to see.
Feels like Australia in particular is really buzzing at the moment on the CPR side.
Yeah, it really is. So apparently one of the guys there was telling us they had a contact down in, I think it's Newcastle, one of the big ports in Australia. And during COVID, at the start of COVID, ships were just dropping. Super yachts were coming in on the backs of boats like never before because all these Aussie owners wanted their boats at home. And it's funny because a lot of people criticize. In Australia, they get a bit upset because people say, oh, well, there's no cruising in Australia. And it's all in New Zealand. And obviously, New Zealand has amazing cruising and you can spend almost a lifetime exploring the islands and fjords and beautiful cruising areas of New Zealand. But the Aussies say, well, you know, we've got a pretty good coast too. And there's lots more shelter than people think. There's lots more places to drop the hook. There's lots more to see than people. They just kind of see this slightly bland coast, obviously, with the great exception of the Great Barrier Reef and Whitsundays and places like that. But outside of those obvious destinations, there's a lot more to see in Australia than people give the Australian coast credit for.
The Kimberleys as well. I think we spoke about it on the podcast before. It's fortunate enough to spend some time there, and that's, you know, very different. Can't really get much more different to the Great Barrier Reef, the Kimberleys. Appreciate it's a long distance between the two, but it's, yeah, there's definitely variety there.
Yeah, there really is. And I think with the amount of super yacht traffic that will be generated by the Olympics, a lot more people bringing their boats home and you know, rediscovering cruising in Australia. I think there'll be a lot more great stories coming out of that country over the next couple of years. So we'll be there to tell a few of them, hopefully.
Yeah, well, the owner of the new San Lorenzo Axe, which I went down to see in Monaco, that, again, he's an Australian who's chosen to, you know, he's had the boat built in Italy, but it's going back to Australia because he wants to go, and he said he wants to explore all the Australian coastline before he heads anywhere else. So I'm sure he's not the only person doing that.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot more facilities now as well for servicing. Yeah, so he won't be short of places to take his boat to get a touch up or.
And obviously you're working incredibly hard during your travels. We've heard about many, many lunches, dinners, parties. Quad bike tours, etc. But did you manage to catch any of the World Cup while you were hard at it?
No, I didn't watch much football at all. Really, it was always on at unsociable hours, so I was obviously tucked up in bed,
cocooning.
So no, I haven't watched much of it at all.
Back for the bit. I was checking today. I was trying to work out how many super yacht nations were still involved in a classic boat geekery way. So I think so Holland obviously through to the quarterfinal, having knocked out the US. And then obviously UK and France are also playing each other in the quarterfinals. Some of the big players are out there. Germany failed to get out of the group. And Italy, I hadn't appreciated that Italy didn't manage to qualify in the first place.
Too busy building super yachts.
Yeah, I feel I should have given our Italian colleagues more stick for that.
You know, Italy, earlier on. I think they've got 47%, that's right, of all super yacht production is Italy.
Wow. It's an incredible percentage.
It is.
But yeah, as you say, clearly not enough time to concentrate on football. There have been, though, I mean, interesting talk about the Brisbane Olympics and what they're hoping that's going to do for super yachts in Australia. There have been some super yachts that we think are in Qatar for the World Cup. So I think more than 20 have stopped by since the start, according to Boat Pro's global fleet tracker. Most of them have headed to the new marina at Old Doha Port, which was specifically built for the World Cup. And that has got up to 60 berths for yachts between 50 and 160 metres. So some of the yachts that have been spotted so far include 123-metre Al Lusail, 111-metre Lursen Alia, and the 110-metre Fedship Anna, plus the relatively new Silver Yachts Explorer Bold has also been spotted there, and the San Lorenzo flagship Attila. A few others also went to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix first and then went on to Qatar afterwards, which sounds like quite a good trip, quite a good way to team it up. So that included 104.8-metre Lady Mora and 88.5-metre Ocean Coast Sunrays. So there you go. If you're in Qatar, you can do a bit of yacht spotting while you're there.
Send us some photos. So while I was in Australia, you were in Plymouth.
Yeah, I went to Plymouth.
How's that?
Actually, I have to say, I don't think I've ever been to Plymouth before. And we're in the old dockyard that they have kind of completely renovated. It's actually very impressive. It's beautiful. I put a story on my Instagram and someone asked whether I was in Venice.
Wow.
So I might have gone a bit heavy-handed with the filters.
They use that Venice filter. Yeah. I think there is a Venice filter.
It really worked out for me. But no, it was great. And I was down there to see Princess, obviously, and the first hull of the Y95 before she makes her way across to Asia. So this is the first hull from the new model line. And of course, once again, features exterior styling and naval architecture by British studio Olezensky. The hull in this one has accommodation of 10 guests, but there is an option that you can create a sixth cabin, which is pretty impressive when you think about the sort of size of the yacht that you're dealing with. It's a great layout and just another one of those yachts that feels really beamy and spacious for the size of the yacht that you're looking with. Particularly the flybridge is just a brilliant space. And while I was there, I also managed to have a look around one of the X95 models, which again, they're built off the same hull platform, but then obviously have a very different style to them and different layouts. So the X95, of course, has the super flybridge, which means that a sort of majority of it's covered, and it has a real sort of urban loft feel about it. So it was brilliant to be able to kind of compare and contrast. And I was asking, you know, who goes, because obviously you get similar owners that kind of come and look at both models and who goes for what. And it was very much that a kind of younger mindset probably goes for the X, whereas a sort of more conservative goes for the Y. But they said it was much more mindset than actual age and depending on how you wanted to use the yacht. So it was great to be able to kind of compare and contrast both of them while I was there.
My mindset is much more Y95 than X95. I appreciate the volume enhancements and flybridge extension that the X95 can give you. But I think the Y95, I think just the lines of the Y95 really quite lovely.
I mean, the X is definitely kind of, it's definitely divisive in terms of its exterior profile. It wouldn't be for everyone, but the space that you get on board as a result, I don't think there's any kind of arguing that. I'm trying to think. I think I'd probably be Y as well, though, in the end, when it came to it, mainly because, as we know, I'm a lover of sunbathing, and I feel like you get more exterior space on the Y.
Well, in which case, maybe I should go for the X95. Sunbathing's for suckers. I just don't know why you'd do that to yourself. Shade is what you need. An inside space.
No, but just for me, yachting's about being outside and knowing you're on the water. So that's, yeah, I think that would be what would ultimately swing it for me.
With Factor 50 sun cream.
And a big hat.
And a massive hat. Slip, slap, slop. That's what they say in Australia. Yeah. Slip on a T-shirt. Slop on some sunscreen, slap on a hat. I think I got that right. Slip, slap, slop. I grew up with that.
Okay, how's it worked out for you?
Well, you know, I'm very pale, so quite well. Anyway, let's move on with the news. What do we got first?
We've got that the highly confidential 107-metre super yacht Project IceCap has embarked on its first round of sea trials. So the yacht was spotted leaving the Penwerf, a shipyard in northeastern Germany that forms part of Lursen's naval division. Project IceCap has remained largely out of the spotlight. In fact, I think we only got a glimpse of her in July last year. The project was originally sold in March 2018 by Moran Yacht and Ship, and the brokerage firm is believed to still be managing the construction. The yacht's exterior design comes from Norwegian studio Saltship Design, and the first images reveal a sharply inverted bow, a large open aft deck fitted with tender cradles that can also function as a helipad. The steel and aluminium yacht features a total interior volume of more than 6,500 GT and is expected to offer accommodation for up to 20 guests split across 10 cabins. And Project IceCap joins seven other super yachts measuring over 100 metres under construction at Lursen, which is a pretty impressive number. Including 146-meter Opera and the recently spotted Project Alibaba.
Next up, we have the news that 88-meter legendary Perini Navi sailing yacht Maltese Falcon has entered into a full-scale refit at Lisbon, the refit division of Azimut Benetti. The yacht arrived at the shipyard's Livorno facilities in late September and will remain there until May. Refit work will include a number of major structural modifications, including the addition of a new 10-square-meter pool and sunbed on the aft portion of the flybridge deck. In terms of interior modifications, the refit will include a number of changes in the accommodation areas designed to boost her appeal on the charter market. The yacht's en suites will also be ripped out and refitted, while the master and VIP will benefit from brand new bed structures. Technical upgrades include new jennies, as well as a fresh coat of exterior paint. I wonder if she can't change colour. She'll have to stay blue, right? Can you imagine if Maltese Falcon was anything but...
It would be really quite confusing.
It would be. It'd be so strange, wouldn't it? All the work will be completed in time for the summer 2023 season because she's for charter with Burgess. Lastly,
we have that the 92.5-metre Royal Romance is set to be sold at auction following her arrest in Croatia earlier this year. So according to a statement published by the Agency for Investigation and Management of Assets, which is a branch of the National Agency for Ukraine, the yacht was inspected by officials between November the 13th and the 22nd with a review to preserve the economic value by selling the yacht at auction. We haven't got as far as having an auction date or anything put in place yet. The owner of this yacht is understood to be a pro-Kremlin Ukrainian national and has appeared on the international sanctions list since February. The statement went on to say that it should be emphasised that the management of the seized property, which is within the limits of foreign jurisdiction, is a unique situation and has no analogues not only in Ukraine, but also in international practice. At the same time, the implementation of management measures is impossible without a review of the asset and the collection and analysis of information about it.
That is... bit of a word salad, that paragraph.
Yeah, I just thought I didn't try and have a career as a barrister, given the way I just butchered my way through it.
I'm sure it means something to a lawyer.
Yeah, but there we go. I'm just repeating what they're saying. The seizure follows a number of meetings and negotiations with representatives from the port, local law enforcement agencies, and the Ministry of Justice for Croatia. The process of transferring the yacht to Armour administration now falls to the split seaport administration. Many, many administrations involved. But ultimately, my understanding from what I've just said is that they're pushing for it to be sold at auction. Predominantly, it's understood not because the yacht's under arrest, but because the owner can no longer pay to maintain his upkeep, presumably because all of his assets are frozen. So I think it's quite a similar situation that we saw with Axioma, where essentially if you default on payments, someone can then come in and sell the yacht to maintain the value.
So last but not least, we have data, which as ever is brought to you by Boat Pro, our award-winning market intelligence service, and now in app form. Download it today. Sophia.
You missed a career in voiceover, Stuart. Excellent work. This week, we're going retro, actually, this week. So in the December issue of Boat International is the feature on Nabila, obviously now known as 5KR. I won't go over the feature again because I feel like we've spoken at it on length in this podcast, but it's a cracker. So have a read, and it is now also online if you've somehow managed to miss it. But Nabila was, of course, launched in 1980. So we thought what we'd do, bearing in mind the top 101 is going to be out in the January issue, is we would compare the difference between the top 101 in 1980 and in 2023. So some top line numbers for you. The average LOA in 2023 is 112.1 metres. And this is in comparison to 57.8 in 1980.
Wow, that's very stark, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is the average size of all those 101 yachts.
Yeah.
The biggest yachts in the world in 2023 against the 101 biggest yachts in the world in 1980. 57.8 meters is the average.
For the top 101 yachts.
The top 101 yachts in 1980. Wow.
Yeah. And I think what's even more stark is so the average GT in 2023 is 5,508. And in 1980, that was just 699. So that is 8 times larger.
So boats have got 8 times fatter.
Basically, yeah. Too many mince pies. It's an appalling joke.
Yeah. Well, it's seasonal. Contextual. It's all good. So what the longest yacht now, as we know, is a Zam at 180.6 metres. What was the longest yacht in 1980?
In 1980, it was El Marusha at 145.7 metres.
Okay, so still a very big girl. But she's been around forever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And there were slightly, well, back in 1980, 19 sailing yachts made the top 101, and now that's gone down to only 4.
Wow.
Although presumably we'll see another entry next year.
So 20% of the top 101 in 80 were sailing yachts.
Yeah.
Now it's, well, 4%.
And actually, Britannia, which of course is now decommissioned, in 1980, she was the third largest yacht in the world at 126 metres. But Nebila came in at 7th in 1980. And today she would no longer be in the top 101.
Wow. Wow.
So the smallest yacht in the 1980 top 101. Do you want to take a guess? Length?
No, I'll definitely get this wrong. Something around 40 metres?
Yeah, so 45 metres. Ariane Nee, which was built in France in 1966. And can you remember from obviously your thorough reading before it went to print, can you remember what the smallest yacht in the top 101 that's out in January is?
Something in the 80s?
Yeah, correct ballpark.
I couldn't name the yacht.
It's 88 metre Fedship Zen.
Okay.
Just sneaks in at 101 this year. So there's also been a bit of a shift around in terms of the top shipyards that are involved in the top 101. So in 2023, first place went to Germany with 46 yachts and second place went to the Netherlands with 26. But in 1980, first place still went to Germany, but just with 21 yachts. And in second place, it used to be the UK with 19, and they've now fallen to 5th in the top 101.
Wow. So ninth. Okay. So let's just recap there. So basically half of the top 101 now are built by Germany, 25% by the Netherlands. In 1980, 21 yachts in the top 101 were German. 19% were from the UK. Wow. So in 1980, we were only 2 yachts behind Germany.
Yeah. It's gone horribly wrong since.
Well, look what happened to the German football team there. So,
yeah.
Who's laughing now, Germany?
Maybe there's a direct correlation. Football success means super yacht. No, I've got that wrong.
Football, super yacht success equals football failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get Raphael to do the data on that for next week.
Sure, it's ironclad correlation there. So that's all we have for you this week on the Boat Briefing podcast, which was mixed and produced as ever by Employee of the Month, Grace Nielsen. That's right, listeners. Grace has won this month's Boat International £100. It is a £100 voucher. It is.
Well, I don't know. I've never won it.
I've never been Employee of the Month.
No.
But Grace, congratulations for winning this month's gong. We'll be back next week with the Christmas special podcast. We'll all be appearing on it, and I expect to be awarded my little champagne for getting the brokerage forecast right.
Well, time will tell.
Time will tell.
I haven't looked at the numbers yet. You're getting ahead of yourself.
Well, I look forward to receiving my own prize next week. Thank you for listening. See you next week.